Welcome to Digital Java Jive, a T360 podcast, enabling intelligent change in real estate. For more information, please visit t3marquee.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Digital Java Jive, a tech and marketing buzz for real estate. I'm here with my esteemed colleagues, Prem Luthra, Derek Taylor, and Andrew Real. Prem, we're going to have a big conversation today, kind of meaty, following the money in real estate. But before we do so, I want to know what you're drinking in your beautiful T360 mug.
You know, I've had enough octane for the day, and so I'm just drinking straight H2O. And I think we all need to do a virtual cheers.
Cheers, everybody.
Appreciate you all so much. Prem, M&A is your lifeblood. You've been doing this a lot. You at your last company, gosh, I can't even count how many that you did. And obviously even before that, M&A is a natural extension or factor of life in the real estate industry. We've got 1,800 technology companies that we are tracking. And frankly, I think there's a lot of noise around it and it's hard to cut through it. And the broker is really the innocent bystander in this. And so as we talk on Digital Java Jive, we always want to bring it back to the broker. But talk to us a little bit about some of the trends that you're seeing in the M&A side of the business. And then ultimately, let's break it down into how that impacts the brokerage.
Sure. So Travis, you mentioned 1,800 different vendors servicing the real estate vertical. And those are the 1,800 that have actually made a blip on our radar. There are probably thousands of others, you know, two people in a garage that are building technology products and their services and offering them up to agents, teams, and brokerages. And so that's been an observation of mine spanning almost 30 years, which is you have thousands upon thousands of vendors providing technology to the industry. And as we all know, today's, you know, realtor, individual agent is using 12 to 15, you know, different applications, none of which really sort of have been integrated or speak to one another. And I've always felt, certainly over the past 10 to 15 years, that consolidation was desperately needed, in at least in the tech vendor landscape. And fortunately, that has started to happen over the past 5 to 7 years, and it really has started to accelerate with some pretty intense velocity over the past 3 or 4 years. And so to answer your question directly, there's an immense amount of consolidation that has happened recently and continues to happen. And these are small companies becoming part of larger companies, multiple small companies joining forces together, you know, by merging. And ultimately, I believe that's a good thing for our industry in the sense that if nothing else happens, you know, a goal should be that instead of a broker or an individual realtor calling multiple different vendors, you know, on a customer service line to figure out, you know, how to fix something when something isn't working properly, or secondly, you know, from an integration standpoint, you know, does it make a whole heck of a lot of sense to have multiple data entry, to have data sort of residing in different sort of databases, you know, to try to put all of those applications together under a single roof, I think makes a lot of sense. That's the plus side. The downside is, and many of you know in our audience that are watching this, you know, sometimes acquisitions and or mergers don't go well, and ultimately the entity that's most impacted by a merger and acquisition not going well is the end user or the customer. And so, you know, I think it's really important that, you know, brokers understand and appreciate the fact that consolidation is happening and will continue to happen. And what I think they really need to keep in mind is sort of what happens to them on the other side of one of these transactions. let's cross our fingers and hope that everything goes seemingly well. And they get the sort of efficiencies that I was sort of describing earlier on. But in the event that things don't go that well, how can a brokerage protect oneself, you know, on the other side of a transaction? And I've seen all types of examples of that, you know, ranging from, you know, putting source code in an escrow. I've seen, you know, having a, you know, sort of blocking rights on a potential acquisition and or merger, particularly as it impacts, you know, the brokerage, so that they have, quote unquote, a seat on the table. I've seen situations where if customer service levels drop precipitously on the other side of a transaction, that there are out provisions for the brokerage. And so there are a range of remedies whereby a broker can protect him or herself in the event that one of these transactions don't go well.
So let's dive a little deeper on that, because I think there's definitely some value in a broker taking away some strategies in this to protect themselves. And obviously it's good for the bottom line. And, you know, what happens if you, if a company that you're launching with and roll out gets acquired by a competitor? Well, you know, putting in some clauses in the contract before you get to that point would be imperative. We've got a large international company that we're working with at T360 that is going to a lesser known vendor, but amazing vendor. And they want to know the solvency. They want to know the financial stability of that company. So what happens in the event that they can no longer operate or something like that? Does the code go into an escrow account? And it does slow things down, but it does protect the brokerage. And you got to be conscious of this. And then just tactically, one of the things that we see a lot is what happens when your product or the product let's say your enterprise platform or your front office system or your CRM acquires an email marketing platform. The lapse in service and the lack of innovation that typically follows, not all the time, but you're so obsessed and absorbed with merging these two companies together that, and then it's really hard to get things done. It's really hard to continue to innovate. And there's a good about year period at minimum where things aren't as normal anymore. And sometimes it's for the better, and sometimes it ends up becoming business as usual afterwards, or sometimes it continues to deteriorate and the end user does suffer, like you said. So those are things I want that, you know, the industry to be conscious of as it relates to acquisitions.
Yeah, and I've seen large brokerages protect themselves, you know, to the extent that their vendor that they're working with is going to be acquired or some sort of change in control happens, having that type of language in your contract so that you have visibility into that prior to the transaction occurring, I think is very important. And therefore, the broker can then ask the questions about, you know, who are you being acquired by or who are you merging with, you know, the financial acumen, as you mentioned, Travis, of you know, who you're getting together, the vendors getting together with, you know, how is the structure post transaction? What does that look like? You know, and in some cases, you know, a business is acquired and they are allowed to operate relatively independently, and it's basically seamless for, you know, the broker who's the customer. In other situations, there are, you know, in, you know, having done a lot of M&A, you know, and acquired a lot of businesses, you know, you look for, you know, cost synergies, and that could range, you know, a myriad of different, you know, functional areas. And, you know, those could have a negative impact on, you know, the experience that a broker has with their vendor, to the extent that there's a lot of cost synergies contemplated in the transaction. And I think it's very important for brokerages to have that visibility prior to, you know, a deal consummating. And again, there's specific language, and you could reach out to us and we could help you, you know, sort of craft that language on what you need to introduce in your contracts prior to entering into a, you know, a vendor relationship.
That's great. And I'd love to hear from Andrew and Derek now on the end user side, sitting on the other side of the table, seeing acquisitions unfold in the space. You know, give us some of your in the field experiences with M&A.
Go ahead, Andrew. I'll start. My biggest thing is agents hate change. And the minute that you make this big change as an end user, which is usually the agent and or their clients, when you make changes to the way they operate their business, normally you're going to have costs that are going to be related to the agent's hate for change, right? Those costs are going to be related to you having to drive adoption again, having to teach them how to do it again, understanding that you will have some agent churn because of the change. There's just no way you can get around that. So you want to be able to kind of think about those costs going forward when and if you have a change like this. And the other part of it is keep your tech stack modular so that if this does happen, you can easily rip and replace without having to have like a major, major change, right? I think that the future for us as an industry is to have a system where you can have different parts of that system that are best in class and maybe a little bit less of a dependency on the all-in-one so that it does allow for you to make these changes and have them be a little bit less obtrusive.
Interesting. Yeah. And I think it's also interesting when you take your former company, for example, you know, 4,500 agents, it's not as simple for the vendor just to go, we acquired this new CMA product and now I'm going to roll it out for everybody. It doesn't work that way. And so it's not all roses and sunshine when it comes to the M&A. Well, the company, the tech company might see a strategic fit. There's history and you got to unravel contracts and you've only got an appetite at a brokerage to roll out so much technology in a given time period. And Andrew, I think you're closest to that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, definitely in the quest for the holy grail of systems that work together, at the brokerage level, you're constantly trying to integrate different pieces of technology. Well, if an acquisition occurs, that your whole strategy for integration between platforms or programs and your strategy for rolling that out to your agents could unravel in a moment. So it is important to be thinking of all those things ahead of signing a tech agreement, certainly, and making sure that your agreement has a way for you to get out or how to handle, if you don't want to get out, at least how to handle it. And that's where certainly, you know, Prem and the team can help at T360 for sure.
I like the idea of being upfront with your needs as far as integrations go, because that is one of those things where, let's say, an enterprise platform or CRM acquires a transaction management company that is not your transaction management company. Well, they're going to be less, you know, inclined to do the integration with that other transaction management company. And now it leaves you holding, like, the broker's always the you know, the innocent by it. They're the party that gets hurt here with all of these moving parts. And so it's like, you know, take care of yourself, put it in writing, think about those things like, how do you want your integrations to work? And if they're not willing to do that now because of competitive circumstances, well, then you should have some repercussions there in your contract.
Yeah. Candidly, some of this can be prevented during the broker's discovery process with a new potential vendor, right? I mean, one of the questions that you should ask, given the fact that consolidation is happening in our industry at a fairly rapid rate, you need to ask the question, are you putting yourself up for sale, right? You need to ask that and look into their eyes to see, you know, whether or not you believe their response to that. If the answer to that is yes, then I've actually seen several times in our industry where the broker says, you know what, I'd like to be involved in that process. I maybe want to put my own money into this. there's a pretty famous example in our industry that happened, I don't know, 5 or so years ago, where you know, the company was doing business with the vendor. The vendor was going to put themselves up for a recapitalization, which basically means that they wanted to bring in new investors. And that could have led to a majority control sort of change. And so this brokerage decided to buy the company. They were like, you know, I don't want to. And Derek said it well, you know, agents hate change. They get grumpy, and brokers don't want to have grumpy agents. And so the way that they dealt with this issue is they acquired the business. And so that was their solution.
Hey, Prem, let's wrap a little bit on the investment. Take M&A out of the picture. I think there's more opportunity in our space, more than people might realize, for brokers to be investors in technology companies. I know of several right now that are looking to raise money. We've got some fantastic companies that we're seeing that are in the early stages of going to market. But a broker does have an opportunity to diversify here and be a part of something bigger. Traditionally, they haven't done that. I mean, we've got a few examples set. MoxieWorks came out of that brokerage family, Windermere, Long & Foster, Howard Hanna, and then ended up raising capital and buying out. But other than that, you see some brokers trying to build their own tech, which is a big uphill battle. But talk to me a little bit about the investment side. And is there opportunity for, you know, friends and family or small angel investors for brokers to play a role in that future?
Yeah. So a couple different ways to respond to that question. If I'm a large broker, you know, with 1,000+ agents, and I'm contemplating licensing technology from a third party vendor, particularly that is specific to the real estate vertical, I'm going to want to have a serious conversation with that entrepreneur or that leadership team on the vendor side about getting, quote unquote, a seat on the table at the table. And the way you typically do that is make an investment. That way, you know about things before they ever happen or in their early stages. And so I've seen a number of instances where that has been the case. And that's been a level of protection that large brokerages have put in place. You know, specific to, you know, we know that there's never going to be a lack of smart people coming up with the next great idea to help make realtors more efficient. And so, you know, having a very sort of fragmented landscape of tech vendors, I don't think is ever going to go away. There's always going to be the next new idea. And, you know, a lot of these companies, the investment sort of chronology typically starts with, I've got a great idea. Maybe I've got some real estate experience, or maybe I've partnered with somebody that's got real estate experience. We're going to build a great application. Now I need to go build it. And either I'm going to fund that myself, or me and my partners are going to fund that, or I'm going to go out to friends and family. And that helps, you know, with the development of the application. The next sort of phase in the investment sort of chronology is, okay, now we've got a product. We've beta tested it with, you know, a focus group or focus groups. Now we need to go take this product to market. And that typically takes that firm into kind of the angel investor arena. And I can't tell you how many real estate professionals today are becoming increasingly more interested in becoming an angel investor in kind of the next greatest thing. I recently spoke at the National Association of Historic Real Estate Professionals, where they've actually created a segment of their association focused on angel investors. And these are their members coming together. And so, you know, they come together, and so they invest a little bit of money and get to watch, you know, the next great idea take the next step. Then after that, to kind of scale a product, you know, an application or software or technology, you know, folks will typically go to, entrepreneurs will typically go to the venture capital arena. Now you're going from a relatively unsophisticated environment to a very sophisticated with respect to financial acumen. And then from there to kind of take, you know, even larger steps, you get into private equity or growth equity firms. And I'll tell you that the angel investment community right now, with members of the National Association of Realtors or subsets like, you know, NARA, those opportunities are abound right now. And, you know, that's just another way for, you know, a brokerage and or, you know, a team or even individual realtors to get involved with, you know, the seat at the table with respect to the evolution of technology and applications in our industry.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, so lots of ways, even at the individual agent level, to get involved, lots of ways for brokers to get involved, lots of ways to protect yourself. Fellas, it's been a good episode, and cheers to some great teammates.
This cheers. Has been Digital Java Jive, a podcast by the technology team at T360, empowering intelligent change in real estate brokerage technology. If you enjoy our podcast, please like, share with your network, and subscribe with notifications enabled to stay updated on new episodes. Your support helps us grow and continue delivering valuable content. Thank you.